That is a wormhole. We believe it leads to a pocket of interdimensional space.
Mullen Locke should be in there as well.
Coming up, Burnham and Booker, hot on the trail of Mullen Locke, venture into interdimensional space in search of the next clue to the progenitor tech.
ISS. It's Mirror Universe. You know anything about this ship?
Well, I only know the USS Enterprise. I've never encountered the Terran version.
But their plans take an unexpected turn when they find themselves stranded aboard the Mirror Universe's version of the original Enterprise.
System failure. Sickbay lockdown engaged.
The control panel is fried.
Will Burnham and Book find a way to escape interdimensional space and retrieve the next clue safely?
You could have just left us the hell alone.
Damn it.
Or will they have to fight their way out of yet another impossible situation?
All this and more
coming up on the Star Trek Discovery edition of Energize.
Energize. Energize.
We're going into the uncharted regions of the Star Trek universe 1,000 years after James T. Kirk.
You're listening to Energize, a Star Trek Discovery Edition podcast, your source for detailed analysis, colorful debate, and spirited discussions about the final adventures of Captain Michael Burnham and the USS Discovery crew.
I'm your host, Anthony McLemore.
And I'm Steve Truitt. This week, Burnham and Booker find themselves in the midst of a blistering firefight as they, along with the rest of the team, attempt to flee interdimensional space with the next clue to the progenitor tech.
Will Booker be able to convince Maul to stand down, or will her deep-seated bitterness spell disaster for her and Locke?
Here's a warp speed recap of Season 5, Episode 5 of Star Trek Discovery, Mirrors.
A wormhole. We believe it leads to a pocket of interdimensional space.
That's what we have to pass through to get to the next clue.
Mullen Locke should be in there as well.
I'll go. And I'll bring Book with me.
ISS. It's Mirror Universe. You know anything about this ship?
Well, I only know the USS Enterprise. I've never encountered the Terran version.
I'll find us a place to dock. So, what's the verdict? Were you able to find them?
Two signatures on the bridge, that's us. Three in sickbay. That's Maul, Locke, and Clue.
Could have just said hello. You could have just left us the hell alone.
Damn it.
Maul!
System failure. Sickbay lockdown engaged.
The control panel. It's fried. I can't get back in.
There should be security controls on the bridge.
Maul, I can use an extra pair of hands to get them out.
One wrong move, and I will dust you.
All right, Steve, so we're continuing along on this journey of finding clues to the progenitor tech, and it's a step-by-step process. And so this week gave us a big surprise in the form of the Mirror Universe or interdimensional space.
Yes, and since you opened with that, I'm just going to say, they're doing it right. And I said this last week and the week before, they're bringing in canon, they're bringing in Easter eggs, they're bringing in things. They finally got it right in Season 5 of Discovery, and it's a shame they're canceling, because they're doing what they always should have done, and that is bring in elements of pure Star Trek that everybody loves, and they did that here.
Yes, yes, and it was very, very interesting, which we will discuss. So we start off with Booker's personal log. We find him in his quarters. He's studying data on Maul.
Personal log. Cleveland Booker, my mentor, he used to say, no matter how bad things get, the one thing you always have is a choice, which is how I know it's not too late for his daughter.
Maul is his mentor's daughter, so he took on the name of Cleveland Booker from his mentor, who was actually the Cleveland Booker. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're right. And it's one of the few stories of discovery that I appreciate. And like, there's a depth to Booker's story that we don't necessarily get with you. I was thinking about this when I was watching episode 5, Anthony. And I was thinking, I don't think they give the characters enough backstory. We got one backstory on that lady who had the whole metal head, and then they killed her. But I don't think we get enough backstory on people. And I think that might be what's missing from this crew. They all love each other, but I don't think we know them very well. That's my feeling about that. But I loved that we know Booker.
Yes, absolutely. And he has this deep devotion to his mentor. And thus, you know, ever since his Quajon was destroyed, you know, he doesn't have a family, per se. And so this is the Maul is a link to his the Quajon life that he once had.
Yeah, and I think we see that in a lot of characters, especially in Discovery. Nobody has family. They have each other. And I think that is the strength of this episode and of this series, is that they have each other. I like that.
And I'm wondering how it's all going to play out, because his devotion to her, how is that going to impact his decision-making? It could be helpful.
Right.
Yeah.
Is he going to turn on Discovery? Is he going to turn on Burnham? Is he going to turn on Maul? That's a, you know, listen, they always say in writing, drama is decision.
Yeah, and this is a wild card for me, because I'm still shaky on Book after what he did in the previous season with the DMA. I mean, I understand what he did.
Yeah, you're really into that.
I mean,
you will not forgive him for this.
I will not forgive him for this. I understand it.
Oh my God.
But hey, I'm always going to be shaky on him. If I'm the captain, you have to have a spot that's, you know, reserved for looking at him cross-eyed.
Side-eyed, not cross-eyed. Side-eyed.
Yeah, side-eyed. Thank you very much.
I know that from my daughters, because all I get is side-eye.
I'm pretty sure you do, teenager dad.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
So we're on the bridge, and in the last episode, we couldn't figure out why the coordinates that Janal gave them led them nowhere. And it seemed like it was nowhere. There was like a trace of Maul and Locke, and then they disappeared again. So Stamets discovers that the coordinates given to them by Janal, and they thought it was nowhere to be found, but they did some scan recalibrations. And what did we discover?
When we arrived here at the coordinates Janal gave us, it seemed there was nothing but a dispersed nebula and a warp trail from Maul and Locke that disappeared into empty space. Now we have a pretty good idea of where they went.
Well, there's a wormhole there. And listen, when in doubt, wormhole. That's my, that's my motto in life. When in doubt, wormhole. But it does make sense, because this adds a dimensionality to this scavenger hunt that they're on that I did not see coming, and I like it.
I am. So we realize that Maul and Locke, their trace that just suddenly disappeared, obviously, they went into the wormhole, and it leads into interdimensional space. So I'm already like, okay, the moment you mention interdimensional space, okay, we already know about the mirror universe. How is this going to come into play? Because that gave us some great characters. That gave us, oh my God, all the Terran folks.
The Terran universe, of course.
The Terran universe. And so I've always loved that ever since Mirror in the original series.
I didn't think that. When I first saw it, I was thinking, remember that species in Voyager, species 26859 or whatever it was, that they lived in water? I thought it might be something like that. I didn't realize that wormhole necessarily meant mirror universe. But as soon as they went in there, then I was like, oh, thank goodness, this is going to be great. And again, they're bringing back canon, which is just awesome.
Commander Reese, have a security team on standby. I'll go. And I'll bring Book with you. Commander Raynor, you have the comm.
Captain Burnham. A word?
And so Burnham chooses Book to go with her on the mission, but Raynor asks for a word with her, and I was in private. And so I can see that there's some...
Which was good.
Yeah, which was good, because he had a few outbursts that would have gotten him reprimanded.
Now he knows his place, which is good.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so when he says this, what do you think at that point? What did you think was about to happen?
Exactly what did happen, Anthony. I knew he was like, I could see that now he kind of fit into his role as number one, that he was going to be concerned about her. And that's exactly what he said. Listen, you're the captain. I don't think you should risk yourself. Let me go. I don't think that was ego this time. I think it was, and I've been hard on Raynor thinking that he's a spy and all this, and he still might be. He still might
You're still going to hang on to that, keep that flame lit. You're going to keep that flame lit?
Yeah, okay. How do we know that these? But he says, I'm worried about you. And it's a nice exchange. I like it. They're starting to gel together and work well together.
Yeah, but, you know, Burnham declines, and she's like, listen, I think that Book has the best advantage due to his connection with Maul, which I've already previously stated could be a strength, but, it could be a weakness, too.
I disagreed with that. She should have brought a badass with her, but, you know.
Like you said before, Rainer states that he's just doing his job, and, Burnham reassures Rainer that she believes in him, but she's also sensing some hesitancy in him about being taken over the chair.
Which is fair. At the same time, I'm confused. I thought he wanted to be captain. I thought he was acting like captain. I thought he was pissed that he wasn't captain. So why is he hesitant about taking over the chair? Now I'm confused.
Well, I'm thinking that maybe he is not quite comfortable leading this crew because he hasn't gel with them, per se, in whatever way he normally gels with a crew under his command.
But when has that stopped him before? He didn't care about getting to know them. He said, you got 20 seconds to tell me who you are. He didn't care.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe he really was concerned, but I don't know. Mm. Maybe there's a little hesitation there.
I just didn't understand it. I didn't get it. But I like what she says at the end. She's like, look, I'm going and you have your orders, and he respects it.
I smell a locked ship.
Yeah, but you must have caught the stern when they were passing through.
You think they made it?
Maybe. If they made it into that.
ISS. It's Mirror Universe. How did it end up in interdimensional space?
So Burnham and Book enter the wormhole, and as they're traveling through, she's wondering, how will you engage Maul? And I think that's a damn good question going to Book.
And it's the fair question because she brings a wild card with her.
Yep.
And look, I don't think that they really played out the emotional turmoil that he might have gone through. Should I? Shouldn't I? I never felt a question of who is he going to choose. I don't think they played that up enough. But what I really liked in this particular scene, Anthony, was the visuals. My God. The graphics in this show have become top notch. I mean, just going through that wormhole.
Agreed.
Oh my God. Don't you think it was gorgeous?
Oh, yeah. It was just like opening up into this new dynamic that I've never seen before visually.
Yeah. Really beautiful. And the music was great, of course, always.
Yep. So they lose contact with Discovery, so they're out of communication. Mm-hmm. And then they come across the wreckage of Maul and Locke's ship and a damaged and deserted ISS Enterprise. Here we are, Mirror Universe.
So I'm getting exactly what I want and what I don't want. What I want is canon. So we get to see ISS Enterprise, which was a surprise for me. What I don't want is something so easy. The second they enter, they find both Maul and Locke's ship, like, immediately. There's no search. But they also find this just massive Enterprise sitting there. What wins out for me is yay, not boo. So I was more excited than disappointed.
Yeah, but it makes sense. Their ship got clipped in the aperture, their ship was bigger. Yeah. The reason why the Discovery didn't fly through.
Right, which remind me at the end to explain a theory but an idea I had, which they didn't do, and I was kind of bummed about. So remind me when they go back through. Okay, anyway.
Steve's theory. I'm putting a pin in that.
Yeah, Siri. My Siri just activated. Shoot. But again, beautiful graphics. And I was surprised. I wasn't connecting to the Terran universe. And there it is, the ISS Enterprise. And I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be great. This is going to be so great. Who could be on there?
Oh, yeah, that's immediately what went to my head. But now, granted, in both universes, the timeline should still be the same, even though the outcomes are different. There's no way that the original crew could still be on that ship. Considering that
well, we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know. So there you go. You piqued my interest.
Fix the problem yet?
Lieutenant Tilly is attempting to boost the comm signal, but interference from the aperture's rapid shuttering.
I don't need to know how the cake is boiled, Commander. Other options, one sentence or less.
Well, we need to find a way to hold the aperture open.
Then do it.
So in Discovery, since they've lost communications, they're trying to figure a way to keep the wormhole aperture open. And, you know, Rainer's still short with all of them, you know, with all their technological gibberish. He just cuts them off. He's like, get to the point.
Well, and I got to be honest, I'm more Rainer than I am Stamets. Like, Stamets is like, let me explain why. Nothing annoys me more when someone wants to explain to me how they did something.
It's strange.
And he says
details.
It. I don't want to know how the sausage is made. I just want to taste it. I don't think he said that exactly. But he said something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's right. But what that shows is two different, you know, writing for different personalities. And again, I feel like this writing team is just starting to hit their stride with Discovery. And I'm bummed that it's ending. Anyway, let's move on. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Remember the access codes from your Terran counterpart?
Already there. Not working. She must have been dead by the time the Enterprise got here. Find another way in.
So Burnham and Book entered the bridge to gain access. They're trying to gain access to the Enterprise's logs. They eventually get in, and it revealed that they had dumped the mixing coil. The warp chamber had been ejected. Yeah. The crew had abandoned ship, and the captain's logs had been erased.
That part perplexed me. Why erase the logs? But what didn't also make sense to me was there's still a lot of power. Lights are on, and there's life support and gravity. So how long were they gone?
Yeah, that's confusing. I'm just, going with the flow. I'm like, okay, what the heck is happening here?
Yeah.
But sensors detect Mauler locker in sick bay and the next clue. And so as they're going down, they stop by the transporter room and they see blankets and kids' toys. What did you make of that?
Yeah. You know, I thought it was a survival method, like, this is weird to say, and it doesn't make sense in Starfleet, but I kind of felt like the main crew abandoned ship and left behind other people or kids, but that doesn't make sense either. So I couldn't make anything of it. I was kind of confused, and I felt like they went by it really quick. What did you make of it?
I thought maybe, you know, the ship had lost power and they were just stuck there, and you had all these people who, you know, had families, and maybe they'd been stuck there a long time, and then people just procreated, and they were like, they eventually figured out how to get out of
it. And then had children, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, so how did they keep life support going? How did they keep, you know, the power on? How did they keep the gravity enhancers happening? Like, those are stuff, that's where Stamets belongs, is when he explains that to me.
Yeah, give me some techno mumbo jumbo, please.
Yeah, explain that to me, man.
Yeah.
Light of hope shines through even the darkest of nights. It's the crew's story.
And so Book reads this plaque, and it basically says that,
yeah,
you know, the plaque gave the ship story, and it stated that the High Chancellor was executed for trying to make reforms. And I'm like, okay, was that due to Kirk back in the day? Because remember, he left. No?
No. I don't think so. I think it was, what's her name?
Yeah, Michelle
Yeoh.
Okay. Philippa Georgiou. That's what, Philippa.
Georgiou. Yeah. Georgiou. What did you think? You thought it was Kirk.
Yeah, but, you know, I think I gravitated to the fact of reforms, because remember when Kirk left in that episode, he appealed to that Spock.
Yep.
Who was way more logical than the rest of the crazies on the ship.
Sure, you know, but he still
all
had the
trying
goatee,
to gun at each you know. Other. Yeah, but he had a goatee, and I thought he looked really cool. But I wasn't sure. But anyway, we know that things didn't work, and, you know, here we have the ship that escaped.
Yeah. And off they went. And so they go down to the one
sick
place
bay,
that they know. Yeah, sick bay, where they know they've got life signatures. They said three. Then they assumed Maul and Locke, and a third one could have been the next clue. So I like what Burnham does. She takes, I don't know, something off of her transporter communicator and puts it in this locket to simulate something.
I was unclear about what she was doing. And so did that locket have a picture of her and Spock?
I could not see it. And I was hoping to see it. It might have been Spock and her, but in Mirror Universe, would he carry a locket around with his sister's picture? I don't know.
I didn't know what that was back, and it was a little unclear to me. But they get down there to sick bay.
Could have just said hello.
You could have just left us the hell alone.
Lower your phasers. Let's talk.
You were the ones who came in firing.
Just at the hollow emitter.
Yeah, or your aim's shit.
Now we have, you know, projections.
Yeah.
Of Maul and Locke all over the place, aiming their
weapons.
They're
really good at creating multi-distractions. So when they first went to warp, they sent out 12 different, what were they called?
Warp signatures that went
warp
in different places.
But they called them dots, right?
Yeah.
And now they've got like 12 or 15 people in there, and they're like, okay, it's a hologram. So they figure that out quick, and they jump in and try to take out the hollow emitter. And there's a cute little firefight. It's adorable, the firefight.
Adorable.
It's adorable.
If you were in it, you'd be peeing on yourself. But yeah, you know.
I would, but they do the obligatory, you know, twist and turn and tumble roll and hide behind the thing.
Yeah.
You know, and, you got to have that in Star Trek.
Yeah, and they take out the emitter, and then they're standing face-to-face, guns drawn, you know, phasers drawn at each other.
Yeah. I like this. It's a good standoff. What I don't buy, based on Maul's character, and we learn a little bit more about her in flashback coming up, is why doesn't she just shoot Burnham right away? Just shoot him. She could have gotten the first shot off and killed her.
But the second shot's going to kill her. First rule of standoff.
Would he? This is where they didn't explore that tension. What if she did shoot Burnham and Book was confused and didn't know what to do? Does he save Burnham from the wound? Or does he, you know, shoot back and kill Maul, the only family he's got? They didn't go there, and I was disappointed that they didn't go there. They needed to advance the story, but that's where I wanted to see a real, you know, firefight and something that really had skin in the game.
Yep. I that would have been interesting. I mean, I love twists like that. So they try to bargain with him, and, it was really weird. Burnham says, you don't actually have the clue.
That's not the clue. Remember, Leary? Decoy stanzas? The real clue hidden somewhere else? They all look different.
And was this a bluff?
Yeah, of course it was. And she's double bluffing because she's saying, you don't have it, I do, and that's a bluff.
Yeah. I mean, I like that she's always thinking.
She's a smart lady. I like her a lot. She's a good captain. I'm going to miss her. They should give her her own series, like Burnham 2.0 or something. Like that.
Who knows? Maybe we'll get some guest appearances in Starfleet Academy since it's during that time period. Yeah, we'll see. Okay. And so, Book asked Maul what she did to earn a bounty on their head, because that's what she mentions. You know, they're not going to go negotiate because they have a bounty on her head. She kind of blurts that out. And so we go in flashback and we see the first time that Maul and Locke met.
I know I'm new around here, but how much longer are you bucketheads going to make me wait? Got other deliveries to do.
And so she was a courier and she was delivering dilithium.
And, you know, they're claiming that it's cut with something, which is the first time I've heard that. I thought that was interesting. And we come to find out that the main person who's inspecting her is Locke, who's in his, full regalia uniform.
Green.
Yeah, and she calls him Green Eye, which is really cute.
Yeah.
Really cute.
Yeah, and we find out that he's a disgraced royal.
Right. He's the nephew of, one of the main guys.
Yeah. And then she kind of uses that to revenge. Say, listen, I can, help you. I can help you get payback. And yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting because we don't know a whole lot about the Breen. They've always had their helmets on. We've never even seen a Breen.
Right. Strangely, they look like somebody else, some other creature that I've seen, but I can't remember who it is. I'm trying to
think. Oh, reminds me of Princess Leia in Return of the Jedi, the outfit that she wore, the Breen. They modified it. They modified her helmet. They modified the helmet in this episode, but in past incarnations of Star Trek, the Breen helmet looked just like Princess Leia.
I thought you were talking about her bikini, but okay, that's something different.
That is something different.
It is something different. I see what you're saying. But, look, there's something. This is what I liked about this episode. One of the things is that they touched upon the nature of you know, of a feeling that you can't describe, of when you're attracted to someone for no reason, when, you know, the heart wants what the heart wants. And for some reason, she sees something in this guy and he sees something in her that they can't describe and they can't deny. And she wins him over and he's like, I'm there.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, and so, you know, there were multiple flashbacks, but we'll talk about it all here. So over time, we see that their relationship gets closer as she has made several career runs with him.
Right.
And he's her point person. And so she asks him to reveal his face. And I guess that's something that's not normal. And he does.
First time you see it, it's kind of this gelatinous face, because I guess that must be some kind of protecting for the mask. But she still looks at him like, you're beautiful. You could see it on her. By the way, I just want to say, I didn't look up who this actress was. She was really good. Molly is a really good actress.
Yes.
Just her little nuances, the way, it's hard to see what Locke is like with his prosthetics, but she's really good. This episode especially, I'm like, that woman can act. I was very impressed.
Yes, Eve Harlow, that's her name.
Eve Harlow. Take a bow. She did a great job. I'm going to give her some clapping.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Great job.
Come with me. Just you and me. Who's that?
My uncle. Breen Primark of a sixth flight.
And so what eventually happens is they've basically fallen in love, and she asks him to leave with her.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I can't do that. And then the uncle discovers them and, tries to get him to kill her.
Well, this is the Batman Begins moment where they ask Bruce Wayne to kill this guy who stole a goat and killed a farmer for his land. And Bruce Wayne says, I can't do that. That's not who I am. It makes us like that. And Locke's like, he grabs the weapon, but he doesn't kill Maul, he shoots the two guards holding her and then holds it on the uncle. And look, we all saw that coming because it is
too.
A flashback.
Shoots him in the shoulder. Shoots him in the shoulder.
Disables him. And off they go. And that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So there definitely is a love there. There's devotion towards each other. And that's we finally get the full backstory as to how they came together. And that was much appreciated.
Good storytelling. They told us right in the middle of the season. Now we get them. And, you know, a criminal is only a hurt person with a reason to do what they're doing, right? And so now we understand their reasons.
System failure. Sickbay lockdown engaged.
And so the standoff ends, they get into a firefight, and they trigger these containment fields, which trap Locke and Burnham down in sickbay. So now Maul and Book have to work together
to work together.
Controls on the bridge.
That's right.
Yep.
And, you know, they don't trust each other, but it's good that they're forced to do this, because you've got Burnham and Locke in a kind of a standoff, but I like what Book and Maul do. They start talking to each other, and they talk about the original Cleveland Booker.
One day, he just stopped coming home. My mom had to get a job in the Rubinium Mines. You have any idea what that's like? She died when I was 14, and I was left completely alone.
You know, Maul felt abandoned.
Derelict dad.
Yeah. I was abandoned. And then, you know, Book claims, well, he left you to protect you. But, you know, what kid understands that?
No, all they know is that you left. That's
Yeah, of course.
That's all they're going to understand, and rightfully so, because it's their perspective. That's all they experience. That's all they see. That's all they know. And so she's very bitter. You know, her mom had to work hard in the mines and died when she was 14 and left her all alone. So I can understand the
bitterness. I know, that sucks. So you get it. And I think she plays it well, especially in the flashbacks. They give her a little bit longer hair. She's a little more rebellious and less angry. She's more like freewheeling, and she finds this guy. But I really like this character. I wish they gave them better names. We've talked about this. Maul and Locke. I'm not a fan.
I am Maul and Locke. I'm Bunsen
Maul
and Beaker.
Maul and Locke. Locke and Maul. Maul and Locke. Locke and Maul. to come up, up with something. Anyway.
All right. Okay. So
go for it.
While Book and Maul are working on the bridge, you know, we have Burnham and Locke, and she's asking him, why are you doing this?
Do you even know what you're after? What all these clues lead to?
Power beyond all comprehension. That's what the diary said. I don't care. As long as it can end an Arriga.
If the Breen got a hold of that power, it would be catastrophic.
And he's like, it's a power beyond all comprehension. And more importantly, it's a way for them to get the bounty off their head. So and they can leave and flee.
Yeah. And he's just saying, look, I actually don't care what it is. I just want to be with Maul. And that's it. And I'll do what I need to do. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep. And Burnham's like, but do you trust the Marine more than you trust Starfleet, you know, with his power?
And there's the rub. He starts to think, right? He's like, well, shoot, do I or don't I? Because he knows what his uncle is capable of, right? And she's like, look, I'll advocate for you. I'll come back with us. Now, I can tell you this. If I was an outsider and Starfleet said, I'll advocate for you, I wouldn't believe them.
Because
she didn't promise I'll get you off. She said, I'll advocate for you, which to me says, well, yeah, you'll put in your best effort, but that's not going to make me free.
Yeah, it's like the policeman intended making a deal, you know, trying to shake the tree.
Yeah, come on, man. Listen,
enterprise.
We can save you a lot of jail time here, fella. Just tell us. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And he asked, you know, if we turn ourselves in, can we serve together? And, you know,
and she says, I'll advocate for it, which means probably no.
You're not, you know?
Yeah. So she doesn't have power.
I wouldn't believe it. So,
no.
And you can see, you know, back on the bridge, you know, you can see the impatience and frustration that Maul has. And she, tries she does a power surge and basically shorts out the ship and now is drifting towards the aperture that's expanding and closing.
What are you doing?
Creating a power surge. It'll burn through the security system. Short out the containment field.
Could do a lot more to a ship this old. Look, wait, let me just check the...
Shit.
Look out!
Which, by the way, if you ask my wife, that's exactly how I would handle it. Like, I'm bored, I'm done, nothing's happening, let me just rip this out, and then
she's
just
like,
ruins
wait,
everything.
Steve, wait!
You know, she'd be like, don't do that, honey, you're an idiot. And I go, no, I know what I'm doing, I'd rip it out and destroy the ship. So that's what she does.
Yep.
And suddenly, you know, it wipes out everything. But it does drop the containment field.
Let me go, or I will cut through you. Move!
Yep, and then we get into a fist fight here.
Oh, it's a good fight.
Yeah, good it's a good fight. Yeah, yeah, between the two of them. And, you know, my goodness, he gets gored in the process.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a good back and forth. This is what I like about Burnham is she knows how to throw a punch. And this guy doesn't seem like a fighter to me, and that's why they're evenly matched. He's bigger than she is, but she knows how to fight. So somehow, by some weird wrestling, he gets that metal piece that he grabs into his shoulder, and it's not great.
Yeah.
But Maul shows up, and she's like, oh, my God, what have you done? And she's like, it was an accident. And I feel like they can save Locke, and they can do this, but they got to get back to Discovery.
Yep. Yep. And so, you know, Burnham and Book head back to the bridge and they're trying to figure out how are we going to, you know, take care
Fix
of the situation
this.
Because as soon as that ship goes through the aperture, it's going to get sheared in half.
Yeah. Which brings me back to my original point. Remind me, I'll talk about it when they're going through. Go ahead.
Okay. And so they get on the bridge and Burnham sends a tractor beam through the aperture, which is detected by Discovery.
Commander. Something happening at the aperture.
Lieutenant Gallo, enhance it.
Aye, Commander. Seems to be a tractor beam.
From the shuttle?
No, something much larger.
Commander Stamets. Ensign Tall, get in here.
Which is good, but they can't reach it, right? They've got to open up this wormhole and they've got to make it bigger. The Enterprise is too big. Again, I love that it's the Enterprise. It's too big to go through on its own. By the way, the shuttle was blown away when they rocked the ship. So they've got to go through, and they've got 8 minutes to do it. I love the 8 minute countdown.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, so Stamets and Tilly find a way to open an aperture by, naturally by sending torpedoes in a certain pattern that blows. But
there's always an answer.
Yeah. So like you said, it's only going to stay open for a second there, long enough to get the ship through.
Yeah.
And so the Enterprise passes through, but then Maul and Locke escape.
Wait, but this is my point. But this is where I think they also dropped the ball with the graphics. Wouldn't it have been interesting?
Oh, do tell.
Okay, I will. Wouldn't it have been interesting if, as they're heading toward the aperture, it starts to close and they realize the entire ship can't make it and they saucer separate and only the saucer goes through? And the rest of the ship is caught up in the closing aperture and gets destroyed.
I don't know if the original Enterprise could
Wouldn't
do that,
have
though.
Been? It did. Because, yes, you did not read the Matt Jeffries technical manual of the original Enterprise did have saucer SEP capability. Thank you. Your Honor, I rest my case.
I only thought Enterprise D could do that.
No. The original Enterprise had mentioned that it could saucer set. So, and this Enterprise, I think, of course would have also, but wouldn't that have been fascinating if they separated the saucer and went through just as the saucer? That's what I was hoping for. It didn't happen. I was bummed, and I think they dropped the ball there. I'm just going to say that.
I have to admit, I learn something new every day because you're 10 times more of a Star Trek connoisseur than I am.
Well,
so
maybe eight times more.
Okay, but that's an interesting fact. Now,
don't go hard on yourself.
Then, of course, after this is all over, now I'm going to have to go take a look at the specs
you
on it.
You must Google.
Yes, I shall. I shall do that. Yeah. So Maul and Locke escape.
But they get through.
They get through, and Maul and Locke jump out of there as well. And so we're on the other side, and Burnham and Rayner discuss the signal that she sent, and it had to do with her knowing about his history and culture.
Ballad of Krull, section 4, verse 7. Krull calls to his war brother for rescue with a repeating drumbeat. I was impressed.
It was a long shot, no question. Great work today.
And they discussed that before when they were talking. She mentioned some kind of Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra kind of scenario for his culture, and he's like, "Oh, you studied me," and they're coming together. I'm starting to soften on Rayner, like maybe he isn't the bad guy, but I'm still not 100% convinced.
Okay, well maybe he's just a courier.
Maybe
I'm just an errand boy. Maybe that's what he is. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. And so finally we find ourselves, she has the vial and she's, speaking with Book about how the ISS came to be over there and how the clue got over there, which was a little convoluted for me.
See, the scientists who left on the Enterprise must have known the history of that ship.
Ha. She did. She was Taryn, the ship's junior science officer. Dr. Cho.
Again, so let's look at it from a producer standpoint, right? We've kind of messed up for the last four seasons. We know what the formula is. Canon, canon, canon. We throw ISS Discovery in here, but we didn't really do our research and we really didn't. I mean, if who's the guy who does Lower Decks? Michael McCann? If Michael McCann had produced this, it would have been a much more, revealing episode. Why was ISS there? And here's the thing, and I wanted to mention this too. Owashakun and Detmer are assigned to take Enterprise off to the fleet yards or whatever and be decommissioned or recommissioned, something like that. Here's what's been happening in the last four episodes. Suddenly, Saru is gone, and now Detmer and Owashakun are gone. If you notice, during this entire thing, they had an entirely new bridge crew.
Yes.
Why?
I did notice that.
Where
and they actually made it noticeable about the shift change at the very top.
Why?
Hey,
why?
There's purpose.
So here's what I want to know. Are they Are they getting, are people jumping the ship before it leaves? You know, technically from a Paramount standpoint, why is Saru not there anymore? Why aren't Detmer and Woshigun there? They're big crew members, right? But we don't have their backstories. We never saw a backstory episode of either of them. You know. So maybe they're like, screw this, I'm out. And it's like, oh, well, they're taking the Enterprise. I'm looking at this from a, you know, behind the curtain standpoint, and I'm dubious. Just got to say.
Well, you know, it's a good point. You know, I'm going to ride on the speculation, maybe not as far as the Paramount angle, but maybe something bad's really going to happen, and these people are going to have to all come back into play to save Discovery.
Okay, that's good. That's what I hope for. There should be a final episode where they're all together and work together. I want to see Saru back. He hasn't been in the last two or three episodes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Two episodes. And suddenly, yeah, everyone's gone. Yeah, okay. So that's what I wanted to say. It's suspicious to me. Suspicious.
Well, we will see. We have the next. We have this file. So we end as we always end with we have a clue, and then it leads us to the next thing. So I will say that, you know, I was intrigued by this episode because anytime you're dealing with the Mirror Universe, I can't say that it paid off in the way that I would have liked.
Right. Right.
But it was intriguing. And the toss to, you know, the throwback or nod to canon is always good. But the adventure is still intriguing. I'm still along for the ride.
You cannot beat a scavenger hunt. I don't care what show or book or movie it is. A scavenger hunt is awesome. In my opinion, and I love everyone at Paramount, too little too late. I think that they should have done this in season three when they got to the 29th century or whatever the hell it is, but they're doing their best. It feels desperate to me, but it's still good. I'm in for the ride.
Well, that concludes this episode of the Star Trek Discovery edition of Energize.
Thank you so much for listening. We love having you guys aboard. You should check out anthonymclemore.com to learn all about Anthony, or you can go to stevetruitt.com and learn about my new book, Mindset Chronicles Book 2, The Spill, coming out May 21st.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Anthony McLemore.
I'm Steve Truitt. Live long and prosper.